You may begin.
Thank you, Jen. I'd like to welcome everyone to the first College Football Playoff Selection Committee teleconference for the 2025 season. Joining us here tonight is Rich Clark, the Executive Director of the College Football Playoff, along with Mac Rhodes, the College Football Playoff Selection Committee Chair. This time, I'd like to turn it over to Mac for an opening comment. Mac?
Thank you, Brett. Good evening, everyone, and certainly a pleasure to be with all of you, and I look forward to answering your questions. Because this is the first meeting, I have a statement that I'm going to literally go ahead and read to you. It's lengthy, so I apologize in advance, and I promise that I won't need to read it the next time we get together a week from now. So, welcome to the second year of the playoff. My name is Mac Rhodes. It's my honor to be the new chairman of the selection committee. As you've seen, we've wrapped up our first ranking of the 25-26 season. I'd like to remind everyone on how it works. The rules for the committee are set by the 10 commissioners and the athletic director of Notre Dame, who all serve on the management committee that runs the playoff. Their instructions to us are to select the best, with emphasis on best, 25 teams in college football and rank them for inclusion in the playoff. Preseason polls do not matter to us. No other organization's polls matter to us. What happened last year does not matter. Conference affiliations do not matter. We focus solely on the individual teams. We consider teams' performance on the field, their strength of schedule, their head-to-head matchups, and results against common opponents. This year, we have 12 members on the committee, and we discuss all of the above factors, and we do so in depth. It's a lively conversation, it's an informed conversation, and I think it's a debate that fans will be proud to hear because we take this seriously. Our committee members come prepared each and every meeting. We're comprised of sitting and retired athletic directors, retired head coaches, a former student athlete who's in the College Hall of Fame, and one retired journalist. We have lots of data and statistics that are studied, but the committee is subjective by design. Each person on the committee has a lot of work to do. We watch the games. Let me repeat that. We watch the games, we study the stats, debate the merits of each team, and then we vote. One thing will be different this year. Last year, the top four conference champions received a bye. This year, regardless of conference, the top four ranked teams will automatically earn a first-round bye. You've already seen our ranking. Each one is important, whether it's the number one ranked team or the 25th ranked team, and all of the teams in between. That's why we work hard to get it right for the institutions, for the head coaches, and most importantly, for the student athletes. Thanks for listening, and I'm ready to take your questions.
And our first question will come from Joey Kaufman with the Columbus Dispatch.
Just wondering what the debate was like at number one and what tilted things in Ohio State's favor over Indiana and A&M.
Good evening, Joey. This is Mac, and I certainly appreciate the question. There was robust conversation, discussion about, you know, 1 through 3, all three of them, you know, undefeated. Great conversation and discussion about Ohio State and Indiana. Two really, really quality teams. Two teams with really, really good wins. Ohio State versus number 11 Texas, and in a win over 23 Washington, Indiana, number 9 Oregon, number 20 Iowa, both defenses, both offenses ranked in the top 5, and so it was certainly close. But when we looked, at film, and you know, we're blessed to have committee members and coaches that do a lot of film work. We just felt like Ohio State had a slight edge when we think about offensive line play. and then a slight edge defensively. And that was really the outcome. You know, Ohio State has some, you know, I'm going to call them explosive players that that probably stood out as well.
Thank you.
And our next question will come from Colin Gay with the Tuscaloosa News.
Hey, Mac, thanks for doing this. Curious about Alabama, kind of what you the committee sees in Alabama, kind of what stands out and why you chose the Crimson Tide over, say, a team like Ole Miss or BYU.
Yeah. Thank you, Colin, for the question. You know, I'm not sure when you look at resume, anybody had a better stretch of four games. When you think about Alabama, really, really impressive. You know, two of those wins on the road. You know, going into Athens, you know, one of the hardest, toughest environments to be able to get out of there with a win. You know, there was certainly discussion about the Florida State loss early on, but just felt like, you know, that four-game stretch, which, you know, by the way, historical in the SEC, nobody's being ranked teams without a bye. And then, you know, they also, you know, finish that up with a good win against South Carolina. So that was the discussion. You know, I think they're getting elite quarterback play right now from Simpson. So a really, really good football team.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Don Williams with the Lubbock Avalanche Journal.
Yes, I was just curious, interested how the committee views or evaluated Texas Tech.
Yeah, Don. You know, Texas Tech, again, great respect for them. You know, going into Utah, and again, you know, we've got Utah ranked at 13, but going into Utah and winning at Utah, we thought was a really, really quality win. You know, the loss at Arizona State without Barron at quarterback. Arizona State wins that late. So we do talk about, you know, quality wins. We also talk about quality losses. But Texas Tech, just a really, really good football team. And look, we tried to help ESPN out with their ratings, getting BYU and Texas Tech together with game day in Lubbock. So enjoy that.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Ari Wasserman with On Three.
Hey, Mac. I'm just curious, when it came to Notre Dame's ranking, a two-loss team that doesn't have as many quality wins as some of the teams that are ranked below them, how you guys arrived at Notre Dame at 10?
Yeah, I think, and it's a great question, Ari, and we had a lot of conversation, obviously, about Notre Dame. I think it starts with, you know, two losses, total of 4 points. Against two very, very good teams. Obviously, one of them ranked third in the country, and Ron ranked 18th. We talked about, you know, I think early on defensively, you know, maybe they weren't as good as what we thought they would be, but, you know, certainly most recent, it seems like they've been, you know, much, much better defensively. Already six straight wins. You look at their backfield, Jadarian Price, Jeremiah Love, you know, probably the best backfield in the country when you think about 1-2 punch. You know, going into the SEC, Southern Cal game, they lost their starting center for the year, and they were able to overcome that and run for a bunch of yards again against Southern Cal. So, you know, We think Notre Dame's a really, when we look at the tape, we think Notre Dame's a really solid football team, both sides of the ball.
And if you don't mind, can I have a follow-up here? how much is timing of loss factored in? And if you guys have feelings about who's playing well or how good the players are, how far can you guys veer off of what the actual metrics and, you know, protocol says when making these rankings?
I think our timing of loss, again, we look at complete, full, total body of work. So I don't know that that is a huge factor. And then, Ari, I apologize, but can you repeat the second part of that question?
It's just in terms of, like, strength of record, strength of schedule, quality wins. It doesn't, you know, Notre Dame has some edge in some areas, but quality wins certainly not. How much do feelings and eye test and the things that you guys see and believe while watching the games, you know, take weight in comparison to the actual data that might say otherwise?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think we refer to it as art and science, and I think, you know, the art is watching the team on film and tape and, you know, how good they are, you know, how physical they are up front, offensive line, defensive line play. How good are they up the middle? Their quarterback play, you know, their skill players, and then certainly, you know, contemplating and looking at metrics. And, you know, Ari, I know you know this, but, you know, not any one metric weighted heavier than the other. I mean, we use them all at our disposal to try to get the very best answer. And I think, you know, that's where I think the public misses out a little bit. Just the beauty in this is the actual debate and discussion and conversation in the room when we're talking about all of those metrics. I hope that answers your question.
Thanks, Mac. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you, Ari.
And we'll move next to Alex Miller with the Bryan College Station.
Hey, Mac, thanks for the time. Just wanted to ask, what did y'all see in A&M, and can you elaborate maybe on any particulars about A&M's defense that separated them behind Ohio State and Indiana right now?
Yeah. So what we saw in A&M is a really, really good football team. You know, they went into the Death Valley, I thought, dominated a good, you know, LSU team. You have a dynamic playmaker at quarterback, Marcus Reed. He can beat you with his arm. He can beat you, you know, with his feet. You know, impressive win. You know, certainly going on the road, South Bend. So I think, you know, you're talking about really small margins when you think about difference between Ohio State, Indiana, and A&M. And then I think statistically, when we looked at A&M defensively, they're just lower than both Ohio State and Indiana. And so, you know, Alex had to make, you know, a hard decision, and you're trying to find separators, and that was a separator for us.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Alex.
Our next question comes from David Teal with Virginian Pilot.
Mac, how did the strength of schedule metric impact UVA's ranking? As of now, would be the lowest rated among the P4 conference leaders.
Yeah, David, thank you. Appreciate the question. And again, not to be repetitive, but, you know, certainly we looked at schedule strength when we considered, you know, Virginia. You know, we looked at, you know, three overtime games, you know, the Florida State win. I think that's hard, quite frankly, for the ACC. You know, win over Florida State has lost its luster a little bit as time has progressed, as games have accumulated. You know, a really close game, obviously, at North Carolina, and then, you know, a close game against, again, on the road at California. You know, to Virginia's credit, you know, beating a really good Louisville team at Louisville overtime, that's a really, really good win. And I would just say in general for the ACC, you know, five teams in the top 25, four in the top 20, and there's still a lot of ball to play. And if we go back to last year, you know, Arizona State wasn't even in the rankings, our first two rankings. So, again, you know, to everybody out there, this is the first ranking, and still a lot of ball left to be played. Virginia's a really good team. Thank you, David.
We'll move next to Mike Griffith with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
I wanted to follow up on the schedule strength. I know there's a enhanced schedule strength metric this year. I don't know if you can go into a little bit more detail about it, and then I guess I would ask you about the two teams, Georgia and Miami, with this schedule strength a little low, apparently.
Yeah, so, you know, we introduced the new metric, which is record strength, which measures, you know, how well a team performs against its schedule. And that's, you know, cumulative, sum of scores as we progress through the year. And then we took schedule strength and we tweaked it. And, you know, schedule strength measures difficulty of schedule up to that point, but we put more weight on the stronger teams, and so that was the adjustment for schedule strength. And again, it's you know, one of a handful of metrics, you know, at our disposal. You know, we looked at Georgia, and again, really good football team. I think Gunnar Stockton at quarterback has really progressed. It certainly feels like they have more confidence in him, doing a lot more with him. Again, he's another maybe similar to Marcel Reed, where he can beat you with his arm, he can beat you with his feet. You know, the head-to-head against Ole Miss, obviously we took that into account. We obviously took into account the loss at home versus in Alabama, but Georgia's a really, really good, really good football team. And then, you know, Georgia Tech, again, you know, quality team. I think Haynes King is everything to that team. You know, to this point in time, and I think you can say this about the ACC, not at least at this point, a lot of non-conference signature wins, and you know, we looked at Georgia Tech at North Carolina State, and just felt like North Carolina State, you know, dominated Georgia Tech on both sides of the ball. You know, a bad night for Georgia Tech, but again, a lot of ball still to be played. And I'm sorry, you asked. I saw Atlanta, and you asked about Georgia Tech or Georgia. I'll go to Miami. You know, Miami probably, you know, early on, I think like everybody else in the country, held them in high regard. Certainly the win against Notre Dame, but you know, with recent loss, you know, that Friday night game to a Louisville team. That came into Miami, and then, you know, watched obviously the game at SMU. I think offensively right now, Miami is struggling a bit, and so the committee, you know, felt strongly in terms of where we ran in Miami.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Jordan McPherson with the Miami Herald.
Yeah, hey, Mac. Mike actually just asked the question I was going to ask about Miami, but I'll ask you in a different way, I guess. What
about Miami's team do you see that could make them a potential threat down the road?
Yeah, great question. And I think, you know, we all believe Miami's got a talented team. When you look at their roster composition, certainly think they're really good defensively. I think if they can maybe correct some of the woes that they've had, you know, just in terms of turnovers, you know, certainly on the offensive side of the ball, that, you know, they can certainly have an opportunity to, you know, win games. I think, you know, for Miami, I'm just going to say it. For Miami, it's about consistency, and they're a lack of consistency. And we just need to see more consistency out of Miami headed down the stretch.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll move next to Nicole Auerbach with NBC Sports.
Yeah, hi, Mac. Kind of in the same line of everyone else. I just wonder, you know, we saw some head-to-head results factoring in with teams that are ranked, you know, within one or two spots of each other. Notre Dame, Miami, it did not come into play. I just sort of wonder if you could speak to when that becomes a tiebreaker for this committee.
Yeah, I think, and a great question, but, you know, head-to-head really matters when the teams are, you know, comparable, you know, at the margins. You know, we look at that really, really closely. And again, I think back to Notre Dame, you know, the committee felt strongly that is a team that when you look at, you know, week one to now, a team that has improved, has gotten better, particularly, you know, when we think about defensively. I talked about the running game, and what I didn't talk about is, you know, the quarterback play of Carr. He's, you know, as a freshman, you know, he's just been really, really good. Throws a great deep ball and has been really consistent for them at that spot. And again, to the point of that team is getting better, Notre Dame, you know, six straight wins.
Thanks. We'll move next to Joe Rexroad with The Athletic.
Joe, how are you?
Oh, sorry, I have myself muted. Double muted there, sorry. Hi, Mac. I was wondering, as you guys were discussing these teams, as you mentioned, you know, the discussion at the top of the poll, when it comes to those top three teams, as you talk at all about non-league scheduling and, you know, the fact that two of those teams challenged themselves and, of course, Indiana didn't?
Yeah, we, you know, the schedule is the schedule. You know, we don't talk about scheduling philosophy and how any team schedule. We just look at, hey, this is who they have on the schedule. This is the outcome of those games, and then looking at all of the metrics at our disposal.
And we'll move to our next question from Adam Lichtenstein with South Florida Sun Sentinel.
Hi, Mac. Thanks for taking the time. People already asked my question, so I'll pass it on to the next person.
All right, Adam. Be good. Have a great night.
Okay, and next is Patrick Murphy with 24/7 Sports.
Hi, Mac. Thanks for doing this. You mentioned earlier about watching the film. I'm curious when you guys are doing that, how much you rely on, like, the former head coaches or people that have had more experience than maybe some others to really break down what you see on film for each game you guys watch.
Patrick, appreciate the question. It's a great question. But, man, know your strengths. Know your strengths within the committee room. And those are experts. Those are pros. Those are people that have done it for years and years and years. And we've got great respect for Coach Antonio, Coach Alt, Coach Riley. But I do want to say this. There are others in the room that are skilled at looking at the tape, looking at the film. So it is a collective effort, and it's great discussion. And we certainly count on our three coaches and their opinion.
Great, thank you.
And we'll move next to Greg Maudio with the Charlottesville Daily Progress.
Yeah, Mac, thanks for doing this. I'm just curious, you kind of touched on Virginia having three overtime victories. I'm wondering how the committee evaluates an overtime win, specifically because Virginia has three of them. Is it an overwhelming positive? Is it something where you guys are thinking, oh, they're struggling a little bit because they need overtime? How do you guys look at overtime victories particularly?
Yeah, I think I mentioned overtime just in terms of close games. Look, if you win, it's a positive, and you know, wins matter. And if you lose, we evaluate, you know, what type of loss that is. And again, you know, Virginia, that's a great overtime win. When you talk about going on the road and beating a quality, a really well coached Louisville team. And so, again, Virginia is a really good football team. Coach Scott's done a great job, and again, they've got more games to play.
I'd like to thank everybody for joining us here tonight. This will conclude tonight's teleconference. Again, we'll be posting the transcript of the call shortly on collegepressbox.com. Everyone have a great evening.